Hello and welcome to the second half of the Bloomington Pantograph on Monday afternoon, December 3rd. This is Susan Over. We will begin this section with Bloomington Normal looks for input on grant spending. Do you have an idea on how to spend $900,000 to improve housing and living conditions in the Twin Cities? Officials want to hear them. Bloomington and Normal have that much in federal community development block grants to spend every year on such things as improving affordable housing or fixing home sewer connections. When they ask the public for suggestions, however, they say they get almost no response and hope to change that. Quote, "We always advertise pretty heavily about when public commentary is open. We rarely have anybody step forward and actually comment," said Jennifer Tony, City Grants Coordinator. "We would like to hear what the community wants because otherwise we are kind of guessing and hoping we get it right." Jennifer has been at this much longer than me, but the year I was here, we did not have an ounce of citizen participation, said Taylor Long, Normal Associate Planner. They hope to change that trend by combining their federally mandated citizen participation plans and adding other outreach efforts. This is the first time the city and town of Normal are doing a joint citizen participation plan, said Tony. We will be aligning our outreach goals between the two communities. That is being done in preparation for a regional consolidated planning process, end quote. The Joint Citizens Participation Plan will help to form their separate five-year plans for how they intend to use the money, referred to as the Consolidated Plan. The city and town have brought in the McLean County Regional Planning Commission to help with collaborative crafting of those plans, which are required by the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development, said Long. Bloomington receives about $500,000 and Normal about $400,000 in CDBG funding every year. They will not be combining their programs. I'm sorry, I think that was read wrong. Nope, that was between pages. The mandate is to develop visible, viable urban communities by providing decent housing and a suitable living environment, and by expanding economic opportunities, principally for low and moderate income families and households. Quote, "We are operating two separate programs, but when we are doing the planning for what our goals and objectives are going to be, we are not only going to look locally, but look regionally," said Tony. Quote, "The hopes of this plan, especially with it being regional, is we hit residents and stakeholders in both Bloomington and Normal. By hearing them about it, that churns out more interest," said Long, end quote. Public hearings will be tonight at 6:55 p.m. in the Normal City Council chambers at Uptown Station, and again during the Bloomington City Council meeting at 6 p.m. on December 10th, which is next Monday, at City Hall. Both councils then will consider approving their citizen participation plans for submission to HUD. It has been more than 5 years since the municipalities approved their citizen participation plans. With a five-year consolidated plan expiring in 2020, it is important that the citizen participation plans be reviewed, both Tony and Long said. Quote, "Public outreach is a huge piece of determining what our goals and objectives are going to be for that five-year plan," said Tony. "We want to make sure we have an updated and current participation plan in order to make sure we are reaching out to our citizens in an effective way," end quote. In addition to a minimum of two public hearings annually, other outreach and engagement processes will include open houses, focus groups, surveys, and personal outreach by staff. Bloomington's current five-year plan emphasizes funding for development of affordable housing for income-eligible single-family homeowners, public social service agencies, demolition of deteriorated, vacant, or abandoned structures, infrastructure, and improvement of buildings owned by not-for-profits. Normal's five-year plan identifies priority needs, which include services for youth education, funding homeless outreach services, street resurfacing, a down payment assistance program, sidewalk and ramp construction, and at least one rehabilitation project. End of article. Town Meeting, Bloomington. Bloomington Alderman Jamie Matthew will host a town hall meeting tomorrow, Tuesday, for residents of Ward 1. Quote, "We are getting ready to go into the next budget cycle. I just want to hear from people who live in Ward 1 what they are concerned about and what their questions are," Matthew said. The meeting will be from 5:30 to 7 p.m. tomorrow in the Bloomington City Council chambers at City Hall. Matthew said he also wants to talk about proposed insurance programs which would help water customers pay excessive water bills driven up by leaks and to pay for repairs to water and sewer lines for which they are responsible. "I want to make sure people understand those, and I want to give an update on some pension costs," said Matthew. End quote. End of article. Road closure, Front Street, Bloomington. East Front Street is closed between Prairie and East Streets for water line repairs until repairs are complete. End of article. Man still unfit for trial after 30 years. After more than 3 decades, a man remains mentally unfit to stand trial in the death of his wife, who was found beaten and suffocated in a Bloomington motel room. Andrew Rich, now a frail 62-year-old, was escorted into a McLean County courtroom on Friday for a hearing to review psychiatric reports submitted twice each year by doctors at Chester Mental Health Center, where Rich receives treatment. He has been to court more than 40 times for such reviews. As has been the case since his arrest in 1987, doctors recommended Rich remain hospitalized. In a previous report written about 12 years after Doris Rich's death, a doctor predicted the probability of Rich ever attaining fitness in the future is nil. Rich had a history of severe mental illness when he was accused of killing his wife. Police reports indicated Doris Rich had a sock stuffed in her throat and a broken nose when officers arrived at the bloody crime scene in the 400 block of East Washington Street. Judge Casey Costigan explained the legal proceedings to Rich, saying, "The doctors indicate there is still work which needs to be done before we can go forward with any trial in this case." Rich repeated the date of the next review hearing, June 7th, but otherwise did not speak during the brief hearing. Rich can be held for treatment until June of 2049. If he has not sufficiently recovered by then, the state can seek to extend his involuntary commitment, a likely possibility given his prognosis. Rich has spent most of his adult life in psychiatric institutions. He was first hospitalized for psychiatric disorders in Rock Island in 1974, according to court records. Several hospitalizations followed, including his admission to McFarland Mental Health Center in Springfield in June of 1987. Just a week after being discharged in November of 1987, Rich was arrested in his wife's murder. End of article. Man denied new attorney. Lawyer, fatal stabbing suspect, disagree over psychiatric evaluation. Bloomington. A Bloomington man accused of fatally stabbing his wife will not be assigned a new public defender to handle his case, a judge ruled last Friday. Monroe Elbert, 50, is charged with murder in the February 5th death of Nicole Elbert. The 30-year-old victim was found in an upstairs bedroom of an apartment the two shared at 610 North McLean Street. When officers arrived, they found Monroe carrying a large butcher knife and wearing bloodstained clothes. Elbert's public defender, Brian McEldowney, recently told a judge communication had broken down between the two. Elbert confirmed he wanted another lawyer from the public defender's office assigned to his murder case. McEldowney said public defender Carla Barnes denied Elbert's request to have another lawyer from her office named to the case. On Friday, Elbert outlined several reasons he believes McEldowney has not provided effective legal assistance, including a disagreement between the two on whether a second psychiatric evaluation of Elbert should be conducted. McEldowney told Judge Scott Drzewski, "A doctor has determined Elbert was sane at the time he allegedly killed his wife, an opinion that could undermine an insanity defense." Elbert was initially found unfit to stand trial and received treatment to restore him to mental competency. A second evaluation was conducted on that issue of his sanity at the time of the incident. The lawyer's decision to not seek a second opinion on the sanity issue is a matter of trial strategy and not incompetence, said Judge Scott Drazewski. The judge urged Albert to cooperate with his court-appointed attorney. McEldowney is a seasoned, experienced lawyer, said the judge. McEldowney recounted several unsuccessful attempts to consult with Albert through a video conferencing system. The meetings are not held in person because of some concerns having to do with security. Statements made by the defendant, said McEldowney, who did not elaborate on those concerns. The judge warned Albert that his continued failure to cooperate with the public defender could lead to loss of his right to appoint counsel. Quote, it is a two-way street between the client and the attorney. He can't help you unless you let him help you, Drazewski told the defendant, end quote. McEldowney said he will schedule a meeting with Albert next week to discuss developments with the case, including discussions underway between the two sides to resolve the case. Albert also faces charges of aggravated battery of a child related to two incidents in July and October of 2017, in which his stepson, who was 8 at the time, suffered a broken leg and a serious head injury. A January 2nd hearing is set to review the status of that case. End of article. Saturday Christmas Parade postponed. Bloomington. The 89th annual Bloomington Normal JC's Christmas Parade, scheduled for last Saturday, has been postponed due to a forecast that called for rain, thunderstorms, and strong winds. To ensure Mother Nature can't rain on their parade, the JC's announced last Friday the parade will be moved back 1 week. It will begin at 10 a.m. this Saturday, December 8th. The early forecast is it will be sunny but cold. The parade will start at Kingsley Junior High and make its way down Center Street, ending in downtown Bloomington. However, Santa and Mrs. Claus are still scheduled to bring the holiday spirit to the McLean County Museum. Children will be able to visit Santa every weekend in December until Christmas Eve. Free carriage rides will also be offered. End of article. Thanks to Morgan for work at Area Recreational Center. I was saddened upon reading of Mindy Morgan's dismissal from the managerial staff of the highly popular Activity and Recreation Center, commonly known as ARC. As a member of the ARC, I would like to thank her for her hard work and dedication to ARC and for her making it one of the premier senior centers in Illinois. I wish her all the best. Rod Crumbaugh of Hudson. End of article. Autism McLean names award recipients. Bloomington. Autism McLean will honor at an event, or it did honor at an event yesterday, its award recipients who made a positive impact on the lives of people with autism. 14 individuals and organizations from the community were honored at Autism McLean's annual meeting and holiday party at 5:30 p.m. at the Children's Discovery Museum in Normal. Bruce and Jeannie Breitweiser, David Dow, and Jim Neely, all of Bloomington, received the Above and Beyond Autism Champion Award for their work on the Spider Sailoff concert and art auction fundraiser, which raised money and broadened outreach for Autism McLean. The Above and Beyond Award is meant to recognize community members who lead by example and have made a direct impact on families and individuals with autism, according to a news release from Jackie Mace, president of Autism McLean. The Employer Award was presented to Vasudha Pinamaraju, executive director of the McLean County Regional Planning Commission, and the commission's office manager, Jordan Brown, both of Bloomington. This award is given to an employer who creates or advances employment opportunities for people with autism. Lauren Belleville of Normal and Mandy White of Bloomington were honored as the excellent educators for their efforts to enhance the future of students with autism. White is a former teacher at Stevenson Elementary School in Bloomington. Belleville teaches at Colleen Hoos Elementary School Normal, the hub for the McLean County Unit 5 Behavioral Emotional Support Team, which provides intensive behavioral and emotional support to students. Four children received the Outstanding Sibling Award for going above and beyond to help their siblings with autism. Olivia and Sophia Stalter of Goodfield, and Jeremy Lumsden and Casey Birch of Bloomington. The Gold Star, Member Award, recognizing an Autism McLean member who had a significant impact on the organization and in the lives of those affected by autism, was awarded to Chuck Hartzell of Normal. The former director of special ed for Unit 5, Hartzell is a board member and treasurer for Autism McLean and a longtime autism advocate. For the Memorial Missing Piece, the organization honored 13-year-old Emily Emmy Wilson of Normal, who died September 17th. End of article. At this time, we will move to obituaries. Iva Gaddis. Iva Gaddis, 83, of Bloomington, passed away on Friday, November 30th at Advocate Broman Medical Center in Normal. Her memorial service will be held at 10 a.m. this Wednesday at Calvert and Metzler Memorial Home in Bloomington. The Reverend Justin Iverson will officiate. Interment will be at East Lawn Memorial Gardens, Bloomington. There is a visitation from 4 until 7 p.m. tomorrow, Tuesday, at Calvert and Metzler Memorial Home in Bloomington. The family suggests memorials be made to Breast Cancer Foundation or to the Wounded Warrior Project. Iva Gaddis was born in Bobtown, Kentucky, to Alfred Jack and Ada Crockett Smith. She was married to Robert Gaddis, who passed away in 2004. Iva Gaddis is survived by three children: Valerie Tom Eggers of Bloomington, Denise Roger Hurt of Bloomington, Robert Denny Patty Caddick Gaddis of Leroy, two grandchildren, four great-grandchildren. And she was preceded in death by her parents and nine siblings. She was an administrative secretary for Tri-Valley School District 3 for 34 years before her retirement. You may view the obituary for Iva Gaddis and share your condolences and memories with her family at calvertmemorial.com. Melvin Wick. Melvin Wick of Los Angeles, formerly of Danvers and Bloomington, passed away November 12th at home. He was born in Danvers to Melvin and Iva Toy Girdler Wick and graduated from Danvers High School. After attending ISU, he went to work for the Illinois Department of Public Welfare at the Soldier and Sailor School in Normal. Then he went to work at Country Life Insurance. In the spring of 61, his division moved back to Bloomington. He was named Sales Division Supervisor. He was a licensed real estate agent, and he worked as an accountant for 39 years for Ultravision, providing camera and support equipment to the motion picture and television industries. He also worked 20 years for H&R Block. Melvin Wick is survived by three sisters: Barbara DeVault of Bloomington, Grace Larry Fowler of Peoria, Mary Walker of Lafayette, Indiana, and a sister-in-law, Dolly Wick of Verona, Missouri. Also by his two chosen brothers, Thomas DeCoss and Yoshihiro Semi of Los Angeles, along with nieces and nephews. Melvin Wick was preceded in death by his parents, a brother James, brothers-in-law Frank DeVault and Gene Walker, a niece Janice Jenkins, and a nephew Gary DeVault. Memorials may be made in honor of Melvin Wick to the Imhoff Cemetery or to the donor's choice. Stephen Vandegraft. Stephen Duke Dwayne Vandegraft, 61, of Gainesville, Georgia, passed away November 1st at home. His funeral was held November 7th at the Chapel of Memorial Park Funeral Home in Gainesville, Georgia. Also known as Steve Duke Vandegraft, was born in Bloomington to Melvin Budd and Betty Dennison Vandegraft. He worked for State Farm for 40 years. He was preceded in death by his dad and his son, Isaac Nathan Brown. Steve Vandegraft is survived by his wife of 31 years, Mary Mills Vandegraft of Gainesville, Georgia, a son, Bobby Jessica Brown of Lawrenceville, Georgia, daughters, Molly Jared Carruthers of Lawrenceville, Georgia, Vicky Nick Brannon of Dawsonville, Georgia, and Sarah Brad Virtue of Bloomington, as well as grandchildren. He is also survived by his mother in Bloomington, Betty Ann Vandegraft, siblings and spouses, David Stacy Vandegraft and Brenda Chris Garrett, as well as nieces, nephews, aunts, uncles, and cousins. Thomas Crawford. Thomas Crawford, loving husband and father, passed away at age 71 on Thursday, November 29th. He was born in St. Louis, Missouri, to William and Norma R. Crawford. He served in the U.S. Air Force. He started a career in data processing at State Farm Insurance. He is remembered with love by his cherished wife, Mary Kay Rodock, daughters Jennifer Crawford and Jessica Brian Nussbaum, and their mother, Fran, grandchildren Emma, Sarah, Abraham, and Luna, his sister, Kitra Carl Cox, and many dear cousins and nieces. Thomas Crawford was preceded in death by his parents and brothers, John K., John T., Sean D., and William Crawford. Tom shared his knowledge teaching at Lincoln College and founding local computer groups. His visitation will be held from 1 until 3 p.m. this Wednesday at Calvert and Metzler Memorial Home in Bloomington, with the memorial service following. Cremation has been accorded. Memorials in honor of Thomas Crawford may be made to the American Heart Association or a charity of the donor's choice. You may see his obituary and share your condolences and memories online with the family of Thomas Crawford at calvertmemorial.com. Robert Prewitt McLean. Robert Prewitt, 72, of McLean, died Thursday, November 29th at OSF St. Francis Medical Center in Peoria. Cremation rites will be accorded. A private memorial service will be held. Robert Stephen Prewitt was born in Lexington to Elmer and Fern Sullivan Prewitt. He is survived by his wife, Sarah. He is also survived by their children, Kelly Stephen Prewitt, April Fralick, Angela Coindrell, Richard Fralick, and Robert R. Prewitt, six grandchildren, his sister, Eleanor Arbogast, and nieces and nephew. Robert Prewitt was preceded in death by two brothers when they were young and a grandson, Cody. Robert Prewitt worked as a manufacturing steel fabricator and volunteered as a Boy Scout leader in Bloomington. He also owned Freedom Fabrication in McLean. The funeral arrangements for Robert Prewitt have been entrusted with Quirum Peasley Funeral Home of Atlanta. Franklin Smith. Franklin Smith, 71, of Bloomington, passed away Wednesday, November 28th at Heritage Health in Normal. His visitation was today and was followed by a memorial service with Reverend Krista Price officiating. Military rites by the Bloomington Normal American Legion Honor Guard concluded that service. Interment will be at a later date in Camp Butler National Cemetery in Springfield. Memorials in honor of Franklin Smith may be made to the Community Cancer Center, 407 East Vernon Avenue in Normal, 61761, or to the Wounded Warrior Project, Post Office Box 758517 of Topeka, Kansas. Franklin Smith was born in Bloomington to Harold and Hazel Lynn Smith. He is survived by his wife, Peggy Yeager Smith. Also, he is survived by two daughters, Laura Tom Schoen of Round Lake and Alicia Tim Russell of Atlanta, Georgia. Two sons, Lance Melanie Smith of Bloomington and Nicholas Rachel Smith of Navarre, Florida, as well as seven grandchildren. And his two sisters, Sue Dave Nally of Alva, Florida, and Judy Al Gibson of Bloomington. He was preceded in death by his parents, a U.S. Navy veteran, from Vietnam. He served as a medic in the Korean Wars and then worked for the Eureka Company for 33 years. He also worked at the El Paso Golf Club. The family thanks the staff at the Community Cancer Center, Heritage Health of Normal, and OSF St. Joseph Medical Center for their care, and compassion. You may express your condolences and memories to the family of Franklin Smith at CarmityFlynn.com. The following are pending funerals. Since both of those are from Decatur, we won't mention them. The following divorces were recently finalized in McLean County Court. Barnabas, Anita and Bobby Barnabas. Reese, Randy and Lise Reese. Simmons, Melissa and Jared Simmons. Tartabu, Nicholas and Aziza Kabbalah Tartabu. Douglas, Mary and Michael Douglas. Ringle, James and Lori Ringle. DeRoick, Denise and Edward DeRoick. Auth, Timothy and Kimberly Auth. Robbins, Deborah and Bobby Pointer Robbins. Taylor Scott, Gina and Randall Taylor Scott. End of article. Flick column. Pulling over the future president. It only took minutes in a career which spanned more than 25 years. Wasn't that exciting, wasn't that monumental, and for years wasn't even something Craig Rios would overly remember. But Rios, 56, who lives in Lincoln and retired this year as an Illinois State Police Sergeant, indeed has a frameable moment. He once pulled over the President of the United States. Quote, going a little fast there, weren't you, sir? Asked Rios back on Groundhog Day, February 2, 2001, end quote, at 12:25 a.m. along Interstate 55 at milepost 115 near Elkhart in Logan County, after seeing a black 2000 Jeep whiz past. And for those next 15 to 20 minutes it takes a trooper to process a speeding ticket, that for the speeder always seems more like 15 to 20 years, Barack Obama waited for Rios to do his government job. He was very respectful, says Rios. That's all you ask in a situation. Then 39 years old and a little-known Illinois state senator, still 3 years from delivering his speech at the Democratic National Convention, which would catapult him to fame, honor, privilege, and a place in history. Back when daughter Malia was only 3 and wife Michelle was 8 months pregnant with Sasha, Obama apparently had something of a lead foot. He was doing 90 and a 65 on that night. He paid $95 to the government because of it. Like a good neighbor, Brent Holtz is there. Next time you see the State Farm commercial, which features a load of pro basketball stalwarts, Houston Rockets star Chris Paul, former coach and current ESPN analyst Jeff Van Gundy, as well as former players and current analysts Jalen Rose, Tracy McGrady, Jay Bielis, and Maria Taylor, pay no attention to any of them. Instead, check out the other person in the 30-second ad, the State Farm agent who is listening to all the basketball players' chatter in the ad's neighborhood setting. That guy is Brent Holtz, a 2006 Bloomington High graduate who played on the 2004 and 5 Purple Raider football teams and played for 6A state championships. He played guard on Bloomington High School basketball teams and was king both homecoming and prom his senior year, and played football for Illinois State University until a shoulder injury prompted him to give it up. He's now added TV commercials to his resume. What a year. In March, he married Robin Bowers, a State Farm agent herself in another Dallas suburb, and they had their wedding featured in a magazine. His parents, Jeff and Gina Holtz, and Brent's mom, Terry Sandage, the former Terry Wills, now married to McLean County Sheriff John, are in the Bloomington area. This has been Susan Over reading to you from the second half of the Bloomington Pantograph on Monday, December 3rd. Until we meet again, be safe, and I hope all your days are good ones.